This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recorded by Dennis Sayers in Modesto, California, winter 2006. Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe.
Chapter 17. Visit of Mutineers. In a little time, however, no more canoes appearing, the fear of their coming wore off, and I began to take my former thoughts of a voyage to the main into consideration, being likewise assured by Friday's father that I might depend upon good usage from their nation on his account, if I would go. But my thoughts were a little suspended when I had a serious discourse with the Spaniard, and when I understood that there were 16 more of his countrymen in Portuguese, who, having been cast away and made their escape to that side, lived there at peace, indeed, with the savages, but were very sore put to it for necessaries, and indeed for life. I asked him all the particulars of their voyage, and found that they were a Spanish ship, bound from the Rio de la Plata to the Havana, and being directed to leave their loading there, which was chiefly hides and silver, and to bring back what European goods they could meet with there, that they had 5 Portuguese seamen on board, whom they took out of another wreck, that 5 of their own men were drowned when first the ship was lost, and that these escaped through infinite dangers and hazards, and arrived, almost starved, on the cannibal coast, where they expected to have been devoured every moment. He told me they had some arms with them, but they were perfectly useless, for that they had neither powder nor ball, the washing of the sea having spoiled all their powder but a little, which they used at their first landing to provide themselves with some food. I asked him what he thought would become of them there, and if they had formed any design of making their escape. He said they had many consultations about it, but that having neither vessel nor tools to build one, nor provisions of any kind, their counsels always ended in tears and despair. I asked him how he thought they would receive a proposal from me which might tend towards an escape, and whether, if they were all here, it might not be done. I told him with freedom I feared mostly their treachery and ill usage of me, if I put my life in their hands. Gratitude was no inherent virtue in the nature of man, nor did men always square their dealings by the obligations they had received so much as they did by the advantages they expected. I told him it would be very hard that I should be made the instrument of their deliverance, and that they should afterwards make me their prisoner in New Spain, and where an Englishman was certain to be made a sacrifice. What necessity or what accident soever brought him thither, and that I had rather be delivered up to the savages and be devoured alive than fall into the merciless claws of the priests and be carried into the Inquisition. I added that otherwise I was persuaded, if they were all here, we might with so many hands build a bark large enough to carry us all away, either to the Brazils southward or to the islands or Spanish coast northward, but that if, in requital, they should, when I had put weapons into their hands, carry me by force among their own people, I might be ill-used for my kindness to them, and make my case worse than it was before. He answered, with a great deal of candor and ingenuousness, that their condition was so miserable and that they were so sensible of it, that he believed they would abhor the thought of using any man unkindly that should contribute to their deliverance, and that, if I pleased, he would go to them with the old man and discourse with them about it, and return again and bring me their answer, that he would make conditions with them upon their solemn oath, that they should be absolutely under my direction as their commander and captain, and they should swear upon the holy sacraments and gospel to be true to me, and go to such Christian country as I should agree to, and no other, and to be directed wholly and absolutely by my orders till they were landed safely in such country as I intended, and that he would bring a contract from them under their hands for that purpose. Then he told me he would first swear to me himself that he would never stir from me as long as he lived till I gave him orders, and that he would take my side to the last drop of his blood if there should happen the least breach of faith among his countrymen. He told me they were all of them very civil, honest men, and they were under the greatest distress imaginable, having neither weapons, nor clothes, nor any food, but at the mercy and discretion of the savages, out of all hopes of ever returning to their own country, and that he was sure, if I would undertake their relief, they would live and die by me. Upon these assurances, I resolved to venture to relieve them, if possible, and to send the old savage and this Spaniard over to them to treat. But when we had got all things in readiness to go, the Spaniard himself started an objection, which had so much prudence in it on one hand, and so much sincerity on the other hand, that I could not but be very well satisfied in it, and by his advice put off the deliverance of his comrades for at least half a year. The case was thus. He had been with us now about a month, during which time I had let him see in what manner I had provided, with the assistance of Providence, for my support, and he saw evidently what stock of corn and rice I had laid up, which, though it was more than sufficient for myself, yet it was not sufficient without good husbandry for my family. Now it was increased to 4, but much less would it be sufficient if his countrymen, who were, as he said, 16 still alive, should come over. And least of all would it be sufficient to victual our vessel, if we should build one for a voyage to any of the Christian colonies of America. So he told me he thought it would be more advisable to let him and the other two dig and cultivate some more land, as much as I could spare seed to sow, and that we should wait another harvest, that we might have a supply of corn for his countrymen when they should come, for want might be a temptation to them to disagree, or not to think themselves delivered, otherwise than out of one difficulty into another. You know, says he, the children of Israel, though they rejoiced at first for their being delivered out of Egypt, yet rebelled even against God himself, that delivered them when they came to want bread in the wilderness. His caution was so seasonable, and his advice so good, that I could not but be very well pleased with his proposal, as well as I was satisfied with his fidelity. So we fell to digging, all 4 of us, as well as the wooden tools we were furnished with permitted, and in about a month's time, by the end of which it was seed time, we had got as much land cured and trimmed up as we sowed 22 bushels of barley on, and 16 jars of rice, which was, in short, all the seed we had to spare. Indeed, we left ourselves barely sufficient for our own food for the next 6 months that we had to expect our crop. That is to say, reckoning from the time we set our seed aside for sowing, for it is not to be supposed it is 6 months in the ground in that country. Having now society enough and our numbers being sufficient to put us out of fear of the savages, if they had come, unless their number had been very great, we went freely all over the island whenever we found occasion. And as we had had our escape or deliverance upon our thoughts, it was impossible, at least for me, to have the means of it out of mind. For this purpose, I marked out several trees which I thought fit for our work, and I set Friday and his father to cut them down. And then I caused the Spaniard, to whom I imparted my thoughts in that affair, to oversee and direct their work. I showed them with what indefatigable work I had hewed a large tree into single planks, and I caused them to do the like, till they made about a dozen large planks of good oak, near 2 feet broad, 35 feet long, and from 2 inches to 4 inches thick. What prodigious labor it took up, anyone can imagine. At the same time, I contrived to increase my little flock of tame goats as much as I could. And for this purpose, I made Friday and the Spaniard go out one day, and myself a Friday the next day, for we took our turns. And by this means, we got about 20 young kids to breed up with the rest. For whenever we shot the dam, we saved the kids and added them to our flock. But above all, the season for curing the grapes coming on, I caused such a prodigious quantity to be hung up in the sun that, I believe, had we been at Alicant, where the raisins of the sun are cured, we could have filled 60 or 80 barrels. And these, with our bread, formed a great part of our food. Very good living, too, I assure you, for they are exceedingly nourishing. It was now harvest, and our crop in good order. It was not the most plentiful increase I had seen in the island, but, however, it was enough to answer our end. For from 22 bushels of barley we brought in and thrashed out above 220 bushels, and the like in proportion of the rice, which was store enough for our food to the next harvest, though all the 16 Spaniards had been on shore with me. Or if we had been ready for a voyage, it would very plentifully have victualled our ship to have carried us to any part of the world, that is to say, any part of America. When we had thus housed and secured our magazine of corn, we fell to work to make more wickerware, that is, great baskets, in which we kept it. And the Spaniard was very handy and dexterous at this part, and often blamed me that I did not make some things for defense of this kind of work. But I saw no need of it. And now, having a full supply of food for all the guests I expected, I gave the Spaniard leave to go over to the main to see what he could do with those he had left behind him there. I gave him a strict charge not to bring any man who would not first swear in the presence of himself and the old savage that he would in no way injure, fight with, or attack the person he should find in the island, who was so kind as to send to them in order to their deliverance, but that they would stand by him and defend him against all such attempts, and wherever they went, would be entirely under and subjected to his command, and that this should be put in writing and signed in their hands. How they were to have done this, when I knew that they had neither pen nor ink, was a question which we never asked. Under these instructions, the Spaniard and the old savage, the father of Friday, went away in one of the canoes which they might be said to have come in. or were rather brought in, when they came as prisoners to be devoured by the savages. I gave each of them a musket with firelock on it, and about 8 charges of powder and ball, charging them to be very good husbands of both, and not to use either of them, but upon urgent occasions. This was a cheerful work, being the first measures used by me in view of my deliverance for now 27 years and some days. I gave them provisions of bread and dried grapes, sufficient for themselves for many days, and sufficient for all the Spaniards for about 8 days' time, and wishing them a good voyage, I saw them go, agreeing with them about a signal they should hang out at their return, by which I should know them again when they came back at a distance before they came on shore. They went away with a fair gait on the day before the moon was at full, by my account, in the month of October. But as for an exact reckoning of days after I once lost it, I could never recover it again. Nor had I kept even the number of years so punctually as to be sure I was right. Though, as it proved when I afterwards examined my account, I found I had kept a true reckoning of years. It was no less than 8 days I had waited for them when a strange and unforeseen accident intervened, of which the like has not, perhaps, been heard of in history. I was fast asleep in my hutch one morning when my man Friday came running into me and called aloud, "Master! Master! They are come! They are come!" I jumped up, and regardless of danger, I went, as soon as I could get my clothes on, through my little grove, which, by the way, was by this time grown to be a very thick wood. I say, regardless of danger, I went without my arms, which was not my custom to do. But I was surprised when, turning my eyes to the sea, I presently saw a boat at about a league and a half distance, standing in for the shore, with a shoulder of mutton sail, as they call it, and the wind blowing pretty fair to bring them in. Also, I observed, presently, that they did not come from that side which the shore lay on, but from the southernmost end of the island. Upon this, I called Friday in, and bade him lie close, for these were not the people we looked for, and that we might not yet know whether they were friends or enemies. In the next place, I went in to fetch my perspective glass to see what I could make of them, and having taken the ladder out, I climbed up to the top of the hill, as I used to do when I was apprehensive of anything, and to take my view the plainer without being discovered. I had scarce set my foot upon the hill when my eye plainly discovered a ship lying at anchor at about 2.5 leagues distance from me, south-southeast, but not above 1.5 leagues from the shore. By my observation, it appeared plainly to be an English ship, and the boat appeared to be an English longboat. I cannot express the confusion I was in, though the joy of seeing a ship, and one that I had reason to believe was manned by my own countrymen, and consequently friends, was such as I cannot describe. But yet I had some secret doubts hung about me. I cannot tell from whence they came, bidding me keep upon my guard. In the first place, it occurred to me to consider what business an English ship could have in that part of the world, since it was not the way to or from any part of the world where the English had any traffic. And I knew there had been no storms to drive them in there in distress, and that if they were really English, it was most probable that they were here upon no good design, and that I had better continue as I was than fall into the hands of thieves and murderers. Let no man despise the secret hints and notices of danger which sometimes are given him, when he may think there is no possibility of its being real. that such hints and notices are given us, I believe few that have made any observation of things can deny, that they are certain discoveries of an invisible world and a converse of spirits we cannot doubt. And if the tendency of them seems to be to warn us of danger, why should we not suppose they are from some friendly agent, whether supreme or inferior and subordinate, is not the question, and that they are given for our good? The present question abundantly confirms me in the justice of this reasoning, for had I not been made cautious by this secret admonition, come it from whence it will, I had been undone inevitably and in a far worse condition than before, as you will see presently. I had not kept myself long in this posture, till I saw the boat draw near the shore, as if they looked for a creek to thrust in at, for the convenience of landing. However, as they did not come quite far enough, they did not see the little inlet where I formerly landed my rafts, but ran their boat on shore upon the beach, at about half a mile from me, which was very happy for me, for otherwise they would have landed just at my door, as I may say, and would soon have beaten me out of my castle, and perhaps have plundered me of all I had. When they were on shore, I was fully satisfied they were Englishmen, at least most of them. One or two, I thought, were Dutch, but it did not prove so. There were, in all, 11 men, whereof 3 of them, I found, were unarmed and, as I thought, bound. And when the first 4 or 5 of them were jumped on shore, they took those 3 out of the boat as prisoners. One of the 3, I could perceive, using the most passionate gestures of entreaty, affliction, and despair, even to a kind of extravagance. The other 2, I could perceive, lifted up their hands sometimes and appeared concerned indeed, but not to such a degree as the first. I was perfectly confounded at the sight, and knew not what the meaning of it should be. Friday called out to me in English, as well as he could, "O master, you see, English mans eat prisoner as well as savage mans." "Why, Friday," says I, "do you think they are going to eat them then?" "Yes," says Friday, "they will eat them." "No, no," says I, "Friday, I'm afraid they will murder them indeed, but you may be sure they will not eat them." All this while, I had no thought of what the matter really was, but stood trembling with the horror of the sight, expecting every moment when the 3 prisoners should be killed. Nay, once I saw one of the villains lift up his arm with the great cutlass, as the seamen call it, or sword, to strike one of the poor men, and I expected to see him fall every moment, at which all the blood in my body seemed to run chill in my veins. I wished heartily now for the Spaniard and the savage that had gone with him, or that I had any way to have come undiscovered within shot of them, that I might have secured the 3 men, for I saw no firearms they had among them. But it fell out to my mind another way. After I had observed the outrageous usage of the 3 men by the insolent seamen, I observed the fellows run scattering about the island as if they wanted to see the country. I observed that the other 3 men had liberty to go where they pleased, but they sat down all 3 upon the ground, very pensive, and looked like men in despair. This put me in mind of the first time when I came on shore and began to look about me, how I gave myself over for lost, how wildly I looked round me, what dreadful apprehensions I had, and how I lodged in the tree all night for fear of being devoured by wild beasts. As I knew nothing that night of the supply I was to receive by the providential driving of the ship nearer the land by the storms and tide, by which I have since been so long nourished and supported, so these 3 poor desolate men knew nothing how certain of deliverance and supply they were, how near it was to them, and how effectually and really they were in a condition of safety, at the same time that they thought themselves lost, in their case desperate. So little do we see before us in the world, and so much reason have we to depend cheerfully upon the great Maker of the world, that he does not leave his creatures so absolutely destitute, but that, in the worst circumstances, they have always something to be thankful for, and sometimes are nearer deliverance than they may imagine, nay, are even brought to their deliverance by the means by which they seem to be brought to their destruction. It was just at high water when these people came on shore, and while they rambled about to see what kind of place they were in, they had carelessly stayed until the tide was spent, and the water was ebbed considerably away, leaving their boat aground. They had left two men in the boat, who, as I found afterwards, having drunk a little too much brandy, fell asleep. However, one of them, waking a little sooner than the other, and finding the boat too fast aground for him to stir it, halloed out for the rest, who were straggling about, upon which they all soon came to the boat, but it was past all their strength to launch her, the boat being very heavy, and the shore on that side being a soft, oozy sand, almost like a quicksand. In this condition, like true seamen, who are, perhaps, the least of all mankind given to forethought, they gave it over, and away they strolled about the country again, and I heard one of them say aloud to the other, calling them off from the boat, "Why, let her alone, Jack, can't you? She'll float next tide." By which I was fully confirmed in the main inquiry of what countrymen they were. All this while, I kept myself very close, not once daring to stir out of my castle any farther than to my place of observation near the top of the hill. And very glad I was to think how well it was fortified. I knew it was no less than 10 hours before the boat could float again, and by that time it would be dark, and I might be at more liberty to see their motions, and to hear their discourse, if they had any. In the meantime, I fitted myself up for a battle, as before, though with more caution, knowing I had to do with another kind of enemy than I had at first. I ordered Friday, also, whom I had made an excellent marksman with his gun, to load himself the arms. I took myself 2 fowling pieces, and I gave him 3 muskets. My figure, indeed, was very fierce. I had a formidable goatskin coat on, with a great cap I have mentioned, a naked sword by my side, 2 pistols in my belt, and a gun upon each shoulder. It was my design, as I said above, not to have made any attempt till it was dark, but about 2 o'clock, being the heat of the day, I found that they were all gone straggling into the woods, and, as I thought, laid down to sleep. The 3 poor distressed men, too anxious for their condition to get any sleep, had, however, sat down under the shelter of a great tree at about 1/4 mile from me, and, as I thought, out of sight of any of the rest. Upon this, I resolved to discover myself to them, and learn something of their condition. Immediately, I marched as above, my man Friday at a good distance behind me, as formidable for his arms as I, but not making quite so staring a specter-like figure as I did. I came as near them, undiscovered, as I could. And then, before any of them saw me, I called aloud to them in Spanish, "What are ye, gentlemen?" They started up at the noise, but were 10 times more confounded when they saw me, and the uncouth figure that I made. They made no answer at all, but I thought I perceived them just going to fly from me when I spoke to them in English. "Gentlemen," said I, "do not be surprised at me. Perhaps you may have a friend near when you did not expect it." "He must be sent directly from heaven, then," said one of them very gravely to me, and pulling off his hat at the same time to me, "for our condition is past the help of man." All help is from heaven, sir, said I. But can you put a stranger in the way to help you? For you seem to be in some great distress. I saw you when you landed, and when you seemed to make application to the brutes that came with you, I saw one of them lift up his sword to kill you. The poor man, with tears running down his face and trembling, looked like one astonished, returned, Am I talking to God or man? Is it a real man or angel? Be in no fear, sir, about that, said I. If God had sent an angel to you to relieve you, he would have come better clothed and armed after another manner than you see me. Pray, lay aside your fears. I am a man, an Englishman, and disposed to assist you. You see, I have one servant only. We have arms and ammunition. Tell us freely, can we serve you? What is your case? Our case, sir, said he, is too long to tell you while our murderers are so near us. But in short, sir, I was commander of that ship. My men have mutinied against me. They have been hardly prevailed on not to murder me, and at last have set me on shore in this desolate place with these two men with me, one my mate and the other a passenger, where we expected to perish, believing the place to be uninhabited, and know not yet what to think of it. Where are these brutes, your enemies? Said I. Do you know where they are gone? Why, there they lie, sir, said he, pointing to a thicket of trees. My heart trembles for fear. They have seen us and heard you speak. If they have, they will certainly murder us all. Have they any firearms? Said I. He answered, They had only two pieces, one of which they left in the boat. Well then, said I, leave the rest to me. I see they are all asleep. It is an easy thing to kill them all. But shall we rather take them prisoners? He told me there were two desperate villains among them that it was scarce safe to show any mercy to. But if they were secured, he believed all the rest would return to their duty. I asked him which they were. He told me he could not, at that distance, distinguish them, but he would obey my orders in anything I would direct. Well, says I, let us retreat out of their view or hearing, lest they awake, and we will resolve further. So they willingly went back with me till the woods covered us from them. Look you, sir, said I, if I venture upon your deliverance, are you willing to make two conditions with me? He anticipated my proposals by telling me that both he and his ship, if recovered, should be wholly directed and commanded by me in everything. And if the ship was not recovered, he would live and die with me in what part of the world soever I would send him. And the two other men said the same. Well, says I, my conditions are but two. First, that while you stay in this island with me, you will not pretend to any authority here. And if I put arms in your hands, you will, upon all occasions, give them up to me, and do no prejudice to me or mine upon this island, and in the meantime be governed by my orders. Secondly, that if the ship is or may be recovered, they will carry me and my men to England passage free. He gave me all the assurances that the invention or faith of man could devise, that he would comply with these most reasonable demands, and besides would owe his life to me, and acknowledge it upon all occasions, so long as he lived. Well then, said I, here are three muskets for you, with powder and ball. Tell me next what you think is proper to be done. He showed all the testimonies of his gratitude that he was able, but offered to be wholly guided by me. I told him I thought it was very hard venturing anything, but the best method I could think of was to fire on them at once as they lay, and if any were not killed at the first volley and offered to submit, we might say then and so put it wholly upon God's providence to direct the shot. He said, very modestly, that he was loath to kill them if he could help it, but that those two were incorrigible villains and had been the authors of all the mutiny in the ship, and if they escaped, we should be undone still, for they would go on board and bring the whole ship's company and destroy us all. Well then, says I, necessity legitimates my advice, for it is the only way to save our lives. However, seeing him still cautious of shedding blood, I told him they should go themselves and manage as they found convenient. In the middle of this, we heard some of them awake, and soon after we saw two of them on their feet. I asked him if either of them were the heads of the mutiny. He said no. Well then, said I, you may let them escape, and Providence seems to have awakened them on purpose to save themselves. Now, says I, if the rest escape you, it is your fault. Animated with this, he took the musket I had given him in his hand, and a pistol in his belt, and his two comrades with him, with each a piece in his hand. The two men who were with him going first made some noise, at which one of the seamen, who was awake, turned about, and seeing them coming, cried out to the rest. But it was too late then, for the moment he cried out, they fired. I mean, the two men, the captain wisely reserving his own piece. They had so well aimed their shot at the men they knew, that one of them was killed on the spot, and the other very much wounded. But not being dead, he started up on his feet and called eagerly for help to the other. But the captain, stepping to him, told him it was too late to cry for help. He should call upon God to forgive his villainy, and with that word knocked him down with the stock of his musket, so that he never spoke more. There were three more in the company, and one of them was slightly wounded. By this time I was come, and when they saw their danger, and that it was vain to resist, they begged for mercy. The captain told them he would spare their lives if they would give him an assurance of their abhorrence of the treachery they had been guilty of, and would swear to be faithful to him in recovering the ship, and afterwards in carrying her back to Jamaica, from whence they came. They gave him all the protestations of their sincerity that could be desired, and he was willing to believe them and spare their lives, which I was not against, only that I obliged him to keep them bound, hand and foot, while they were on the island. While this was doing, I sent Friday with the captain's mate to the boat with orders to secure her and bring away the oars and sails, which they did. And by three straggling men, that were happily for them, parted from the rest, came back from hearing the guns fired. And seeing the captain, who was before their prisoner, now their conqueror, they submitted to be bound also. And so our victory was complete. It now remained that the captain and I should inquire into one another's circumstances. I began first and told him my whole history, which he heard with an attention even to amazement, and particularly at the wonderful manner of my being furnished with provisions and ammunition. And indeed, as my story is a whole collection of wonders, it affected him deeply. But when he reflected from thence upon himself, and how I seemed to have been preserved there on purpose to save his life, the tears ran down his face, and he could not speak a word more. After this communication was at an end, I carried him and his two men into my apartment, leading them in just where I came out, that is, at the top of the house, where I refreshed them with such provisions as I had, and showed them all the contrivances I had made during my long inhabiting that place. All I showed them, all I said to them, was perfectly amazing. But above all, the captain admired my fortification, and how perfectly I had concealed my retreat with a grove of trees, which having been now planted nearly 20 years, and the trees growing much faster than in England, was become a little wood, so thick that it was impassable in any part of it but at that one side where I had reserved my little winding passage into it. I told him this was my castle and my residence, but that I had a seat in the country, as most princes have, whither I could retreat upon occasion, and I would show him that too another time. But at present our business was to consider how to recover the ship. He agreed with me as to that, but told me he was perfectly at a loss what measures to take, for that there were 26 hands still on board, who, having entered into a cursed conspiracy, by which they had all forfeited their lives to the law, would be hardened in it now by desperation, and would carry it on, knowing that if they were subdued, they would be brought to the gallows as soon as they came to England, or to any of the English colonies, and that, therefore, there would be no attacking them with so small a number as we were. I mused for some time on what he had said, and found it was a very rational conclusion, and that therefore something was to be resolved on speedily, as well to draw the men on board into some snare for their surprise, as to prevent their landing upon us and destroying us. Upon this, it presently occurred to me that in a little while the ship's crew, wondering what was become of their comrades and of the boat, would certainly come on shore in their other boat to look for them, and that then perhaps they might come armed and be too strong for us. This he allowed to be rational. Upon this, I told him the first thing we had to do was to stave the boat which lay upon the beach, so that they might not carry her off, and taking everything out of her, leave her so far useless as not to be fit to swim. Accordingly, we went on board, took the arms which were left on board out of her, and whatever else we found there, which was a bottle of brandy and another of rum, a few biscuit cakes, a horn of powder, and a great lump of sugar in a piece of canvas. The sugar was 5 or 6 pounds, all which was very welcome to me, especially the brandy and sugar, of which I had had none left for many years. When we had carried all these things on shore, the oars, mast, sail, and rudder of the boat were carried away before, we knocked a great hole in her bottom, that if they had come strong enough to master us, yet they could not carry off the boat. Indeed, it was not much in my thoughts that we should be able to recover the ship, but my view was that if they went away without the boat, I did not much question to make her again fit to carry as to the Leeward Islands, and call upon our friends the Spaniards in my way, for I had them still in my thoughts. End of chapter 17.